Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. It's Tuesday, and by now we should have had the Brexit plan from the European Research Group, those Tory MPs who don't like Theresa May's Chequers plan, and were going to come up with their own. But nothing. Jacob Rees-Mogg says he's reconsidered, and they're delaying. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles to discuss. So, Katie, what's the holdup?
Well, the plan has gone MIA, it seems. It's missing in action. And we're not sure if it was, you know, fully formed and then everyone disagreed, definitely, or if it never quite got to that point. Now, we know from the papers and various reports that there was something that was doing the rounds amongst the ERG, the Tory Brexiteers.
We've had some leaks, haven't we, involving a missile defence shield and other such...
Likened to something from Star Wars, I believe. And then we also had the idea that we were going to send a special force to the Falklands. And a few things which really began to raise eyebrows. There's also been talk of reducing taxes. Now, lower taxes is something that, of course, tends to be popular, a vote winner. But there are concerns that the way it was going to be pitched would make it sound perhaps a little strange and maybe not like such a credible plan. There appear to be a few reasons why it hasn't come out, and one of which is being that people like Boris Johnson were not willing to put their name to this manifesto.
Because he thought it was too crazy?
Yeah, and perhaps he doesn't want to be tied down to a position, but there was definitely a feeling that these big, you know, heavy hitters weren't necessarily going to go out and fly the flag for it. And secondly, amongst the Brexiteers and, you know, even the backbench Brexiteers of the ERG, there were disputes about what direction they should take. And that means that the week that they were supposed to really show the biggest criticism of this team has been, what is your alternative, the whole way through. So this was supposed to be the week they would silence their critics, and instead they just offered them a lot more ammunition.
Right. Now, James, this is supposed to be the European Research Group, the clue's in the name. We're supposed to do their research. So how did these very erudite Tories end up coming out with a plan that even Boris thought was too mad to fly?
Well, Boris was never going to back this plan. Even before, you know, I remember talking to someone very close to him last week before all the stuff about his private life blew up. And they said he's never going to back this because Boris doesn't want to be tied down to a particular scheme, right? Why is Boris enjoying some success in his attack on Chequers at the moment? He's basically taking pot shots at a plan. As soon as he has a plan, you'll get those pot shots coming back at you. And that is part of the problem here. And I think the other part of the problem is that the opposition to Chequers... Now, in kind of media shorthand, there are people who are anti-Chequers. That actually disguises three quite distinct positions. You know, at the most extreme end, they're the people who think, what on earth are we doing? The Europeans aren't serious. Let's just walk away. No deal's absolutely fine. And indeed, there's a boon in terms of the customs revenues that the UK would be able to levy on EU imports and stuff like that. That's group one. Then there's a second group who say, let's just get a simple free trade agreement. You know, that's all fine. Then there's a third group who want something that, you know, which what David Davis has originally said he wanted, which in the jargon is kind of Canada plus, plus, plus. So this, the idea is that, you know, you want a more ambitious free trade deal with the EU than any other the EU have ever signed. You want Canada with added stuff onto it. And I think this is why what makes it so difficult to get them to all agree on a common position, because they're united in the fact that they don't like Chequers, but they're not united on what they think the plan should be.
So, Katie, this kind of changes our understanding of the relationship right now. We know that the Tory backbenchers don't like Chequers. We know, because James revealed at the time, that it wasn't going to get past Parliament. But that suggests that there has to be another plan. You can't beat something with nothing. It seems now that if May's critics are divided, this might increase the chances of her doing a deal with Barnier, which, you know, Barnier claims is could be weeks away. And it might seem that her opposition isn't as coherent as we had thought a few weeks ago.
Yes, and we've had the phrase Chuck Chequers, first coined by Boris Johnson in The Spectator, that has, you know, done the rounds since, and it rolls off the tongue. But I think because that is not accompanied by a plan, it's actually getting slightly easier to go onto the airwaves if you're in the cabinet and defend Chequers, because you can say there is only one current plan that's been put forward that is comprehensive. And that's something you can say without laughing. You're not trying to pretend the plan's popular, but that is actually quite a useful thing to go back on. And when you look at the e-referendum campaign feels so long ago now. One of the really impressive things that Vote Leave managed to do was to get all these people who are, you know, back Brexit for many different reasons, and some are protectionists, some are, you know, free marketeers. They got them to unite around one position. That is proving very difficult to do now, which is why you have so many splinter groups. And the chaos and the, you know, the lack of organisation, I think, does help Theresa May. It doesn't mean she's going to get the numbers, because it's much easier to criticise than do, but it does mean that if this keeps up, then you can see how that it's going to get me a little bit easier for her to sell her plan.
She's also helped by a massive thing, which is when you are Prime Minister, you have the levers of power, right? It will be her deal that comes to the House of Commons. I understand that number 10 intend to bring the deal to the Commons as late as possible.
And but will it be watered down by Brussels at this point? Because I was under the impression that it had to be more Canada-esque to get past Parliament.
Yeah, but we're talking about two separate things here, right? So there's the withdrawal agreement and then the non-legally binding political declaration. So the withdrawal agreement, the most contentious bit of that is what it says about the backstop in Northern Ireland, right? I think we are beginning the two sides. I mean, at the moment, that is the only issue in the withdrawal agreement that the two sides are genuinely far apart on, right? Everything else is pretty much settled. Then you move on to this political declaration about the future relationship. Now, I think that is much easier to fudge. The EU can write something like that we will seek the most ambitious trade treaty that we've ever done with the United Kingdom, but the full freedoms of a single market must be respected. Now, Theresa May will say, they're going to be more ambitious than Canada, so it's not Canada, it's closer to my checkers, you know. While as a more Eurosceptic person can say, if they're demanding that these four freedoms of the single market must go together, then it can't be checkers and it will have to be closer to Canada.
Wait, four freedoms, one of those is freedom of movement and immigration.
Yeah, exactly. So if the EU political declaration, if it says that the four freedoms are indivisible and the legal order of a single market must be respected, it is politely saying checkers ain't happening.
Right.
But at the same time, if there is some words in there about how we're going to have the most ambitious free trade deal we've ever done, and this free trade deal will recognise that the two sides start in complete and utter alignment, etc., 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 Theresa May can say, you'll see competing interpretations of what this withdrawal agreement means. Some people will say it means Canada plus. Other people will say, well, it really means checkers, but they don't want to admit that it's checkers. You know, you're in the UK debate. So I think the political declaration, basically, you can use lots of different words, and words can mean what people want them to mean, because it's not a legal document, the political declaration.
Right, but I assume at some point there will be.
Yes, so that's the December 2020 crunch, at the end of a transition period.
Oh, so we can look forward to years more of this. And Katie, we've also heard that one of Brexit's other opponents, Mark Carney, is going to stay in the Bank of England as governor. This had been expected, and even, you know, Brexit-supporting papers like the Daily Telegraph had been saying that he ought to stay. So is this significant?
I think it's significant in some ways. It suggests that obviously he's found a reason to stay. There was a feeling at one point, I think, during the EU referendum campaign, that he was just seen as a bit of a doomsmonger. Mm. And that, you know, there are some Brexiteers, I think such as Jacob Rees-Mogg, who made it very clear that they didn't actually think this person was doing Britain much good in their job. But actually, I think there are a significant number of people across all sides, but specifically Brexiteers, who think that he has actually done a decent job, particularly in the aftermath of that EU referendum result, when lots of people were losing their head, you know, planning to just abandon their leadership and so forth. Carney actually, you know, he stuck around, he did what he needed to do. So I think it's broadly being welcomed, though perhaps a little cautiously.
I mean, institutionally, the Bank of England have got quite a few things right during the Brexit process. But I think they were better prepared than any other branch of government for a Leave vote. Well,
insofar as they had a plan and nobody else did.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a high bar, but it's a bar.
I think they were quicker to come to terms with what that meant than other bits of government. You know, they, far faster than the Treasury, said, actually, being a member of the EEA will not work for the United Kingdom, in that you cannot regulate the City of London cutting and pasting European documents. And I think they have been correct with the Treasury about that, you know, the UK can't be a rule taker on financial services. And the other thing, which I would say the most secret bit of the Brexit talks, are these discussions between the ECB and the Bank of England about what happens to the financial system. And I understand in that the Bank of England have been very, very robust about pointing out to the ECB the systemic risks for the Eurozone of what I call a no speakers, no deal So if we end up in a no-deal situation, which isn't just, oh, we haven't reached an agreement, but we're still friends and we'll try and find a way to make it work, but rather it is, I hate you, slam the door, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that would cause massive problems. And I think the Bank of England actually have been a more robust and more realistic about the situation than lots of other parts of the British establishment.
James and Kitty, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store. And if you like it, or even if you don't, do rate and review us. We'd love to hear from you.